Support for the Legislative Gazette comes from New York State United Teachers, working to support students, educators, and public schools as the center of their communities through the Public Schools Unite Us initiative. And United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org. New York's budget is now on track to be 2 weeks late. To break down the stumbling blocks and state of play in Albany, Capital Region reporters Jung-Yoon Han and Jimmy Vielkind of the New York Public News Network have this update.
Hey, Jung-Yoon.
Hi, Jimmy.
So the state budget's still late, and things are starting to get a little spicy. One of the state's top lawmakers, Assembly Speaker Carl Hastie, introduced a bill that he seems to think will reduce the governor's leverage. What's going on?
Right. So for context, the speaker's mantra on budget talks is that it should always just be about crunching the numbers, about the dollars and the cents, not about policy. The governor, meanwhile, says she doesn't really care that the budget is late because of policy negotiations. But a late budget is a bigger problem for lawmakers like Speaker Hastie, who don't get paychecks until a budget is passed. So he recently introduced a bill that would let lawmakers get paid if a budget is late because of policy.
Is that actually going to pass?
Well, it seems like it's really just a message that he's trying to send to the governor. It doesn't seem like it will go very far. It's an indication that things aren't going so well in terms of budget negotiations.
You know, the other big development has been prosecutors and people who support the governor coming to the Capitol. They were pushing for changes to the discovery laws, which govern how evidence is shared before a criminal trial. So what did prosecutors have to say, Jung-Yoon?
Yeah, this has been one of the biggest sticking points in the budget. And in recent days, a trickle of district attorneys have been coming up to Albany to support the governor's proposal on how evidence is shared. Some of them are sticking to their guns and saying that there should be stricter changes to the rules about how much material needs to be turned over. Others, though, are showing some willingness for compromise. They're saying instead of emphasizing the rules for the materials, they might be more comfortable with just changing the consequences if there is a slip up.
How did lawmakers take that?
Well, a powerful caucus of Black and Hispanic lawmakers still oppose the governor's proposals writ large. They say that the plan would tip the scales of justice in favor of prosecutors. Hence, the budget negotiations are still in deadlock. On the money side of things, you've been covering that. What's the latest there?
Well, you know, the budget is still big. It's more than $250 billion, and it's built on a pretty rosy economic picture. Remember that Kathy Hochul put this budget together in January. But that picture, it's really dated.
Mm-hmm.
Anyone who's followed the news in recent days has seen the stock market really take a tumble in response to President Trump's tariffs. Things did start to recover a little bit when Trump paused those new levies.
But it still doesn't look good, no.
No, and it's still, there's a lot of uncertainty. That's important because Wall Street, and we say Wall Street is not Main Street, but Wall Street accounts for about 20% of state income tax revenues. So when the stock market's not doing well, it has big consequences for the state budget. I asked some of the top lawmakers about this and whether it gives them any qualms about pushing ahead with such a big spending plan. Assembly Speaker Hastie said it was too soon to tell, but the budget director, Blake Washington, who works for Governor Hochul, he said it did give him, quote, pause. It still seems likely that the budget will be bigger than what Hochul proposed.
When will we get a sense of how big that budget will be?
Well, it's hard to say, Jung-Yoon. It's pretty week to week right now. We'll have to see what progress report lawmakers get when they return to the Capitol on Tuesday. But here's how two top assembly members, Ed Raw and Gary Pretlow, put it on the chamber floor.
We're a week closer than we were last week.
a week closer to what?
That does not sound like good progress.
Yeah, I don't really have a prediction of when this will get done, but I'll see you soon.
Until next time, thank you, Jimmy.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
That was Jung-Yoon Han and Jimmy Vielkind of the New York Public News Network. Lawmakers return to the Capitol on Tuesday.
Thank you.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. This week I sat down with John Caney. He's the executive director of Reinvent Albany, a nonprofit that pushes for more government transparency. We began our conversation by talking about how most of the final budget negotiations are done beyond public view between, quote, three people in a room.
Yeah, I think that the big problem from a transparency perspective is that the real discussion and voting is when the legislative leaders present their agreements, negotiated agreements, to their own caucuses, and that's when you have the candid discussions. And the Schoolhouse Rock version is that discussion occurs in public on the floor of the legislature, like you can see on in Congress. Often there's that debate, but that's not how it really works. That it's less the three person in a room issue, which is just a built-in feature of negotiating in all political systems everywhere. And New York's not really bad in that way. It's that the discussion and the back and forth is all private. And so when the Senate and the Assembly come to their chambers, the decisions have been made and there's not real discussion. There's just a vote and it's bang. So the public does not get to hear the debate and on the budget. And in fact, there's less public debate on the budget on the floors than there are on kind of everyday unexciting bills, during which you have members get to rise and opine on things. So it is very secretive, the entire process, and it's filled with leaks and all kinds of strategic leakery that goes on when special interest groups have members of the legislature leak parts of the agreements to them, and then they give those to reporters. And it's basically a undemocratic and opaque process.
Yeah, I think that you and I would agree fundamentally on that issue when it comes to transparency. But nonetheless, why would lawmakers vote to make things more transparent, which could hoist them on their own petard, so to speak? But yet there are some bills that are moving through the legislature, at least three that I see that you're supporting that would help create open government. I guess it remains to be seen whether they'll make it all the way through.
Yeah, I mean, let me just start with a modest proposal. I mean, Reinvent Albany would actually support four-year terms for the legislature, and so that they're not always in election mode all the time, and they're not always having to raise money every second for their, and we think that that would help them be a bit more deliberative and feel less under the gun from special interest groups and lobbyists. And so that's nowhere near happening. And, you know, that is a modest proposal. But in return for that four-year terms, we would ask the legislature to open up the process and the governor to open up the process more as, and, you know, Congress is more open than the New York State legislature in that way. One of the big problems also I should just point out is that the budget has kind of and the budget process has become the monster that eats everything. And you've got basically a major league and a minor league process in Albany where the budget is the major league and it's the big policy proposals that are discussed, debated, fought over. And then you have that's the major league session, the budget. And then you have what's called the regular legislative session, and what we call the minor league or the JV session. And that's a big problem because what happens is that the governor's power just grows and grows in New York as more and more of the state's business is decided during that budget session, which the governor has maximum power in. And without getting too far astray, that's because of some state highest court of appeals decisions in the early 90s, Pataki versus Silver and Silver versus Pataki, where the state's highest court decided that the governor could indeed put policy into the budget and the legislature can't strip it out. And so that's one. So over time, that's helped create this major league and minor league process. And one part of the state budget being late is that minor league session gets shorter and shorter and shorter.
That's John Caney, Executive Director of Reinvent Albany. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. While New York State lawmakers have missed the April 1st deadline to reach an agreement on this year's budget, Capital Region lawmakers say negotiations continue behind closed doors. The Legislative Gazette's Samantha Simmons with that story.
State government has been operating on a series of short-term funding bills as Governor Kathy Hochul and fellow Democrats who control the legislature haggle over policy sticking points. Budget Director Blake Washington spoke with reporters Wednesday.
Exchange of information continues, signing off on non-controversial issues as we go, sort of separating the wheat from the chaff as we go, so that when we reach an accord on some of the bigger issues of the day, we can hit the ground running and deliver a budget.
Washington says threats of tariffs, federal funding cuts, and policy changes are making negotiations volatile.
It strikes a level of question and doubt and fear in some cases in budgeteers' minds.
Whenever the budget is approved, that's likely not the end of the road this time. Some Capital Region lawmakers agree they will be back in Albany after the close of session in mid-June for a special session to deal with fallout from the federal government's own budgeting. Assemblyman John McDonald says with roughly $8 billion in federal cuts expected, the legislature is being prudent. The Democrat represents the 108th Assembly District.
We can't be running around with our hair on fire. We have to look at each item one at a time, see what it means, and be prepared that if we do have to come back, we have to be very thoughtful about the cuts that we would have to make.
Lawmakers are currently working through several policy initiatives included in the budget. One of the major sticking points is changes to the state's involuntary commitment law. If changed, the law would clarify that individuals could be involuntarily admitted if they do not possess the mental capacity to care for themselves. The change would align New York with 43 other states. McDonald says the governor's interest in including major policy changes in the budget is to blame for the impasse.
The Assembly has had a longstanding position of really not discussing and putting these policy items in the budget. We try to avoid that at every instance because, quite honestly, that is being done because it needs to be crammed in there because it would never survive on the floor.
Washington says the holdup is over bill language. Other priorities in Hochul's $252 billion proposal include banning cell phones in schools from bell to bell, enacting restrictions on mask wearing in public, and changes to the way prosecutors share evidence in criminal cases. Senator Jake Ashby, a Republican from the 43rd District, says the majority's inability to come to a timely agreement is surprising.
It's unfortunate that they can't get broad support within their conference and within their party, because I think you'll find that the majority of New Yorkers support these measures. And I understand that, you know, sometimes policy finds its way in the budget process. But I do think that this is worth it because of the popularity that we see and because of, you know, the distress that they've caused, that these issues have caused over the past couple decades. So if this is a pathway to get to numbers in the budget, then I think we should be taking advantage of it.
Ashby says he's communicating across the aisle to make sure Republicans' priorities are heard.
Even though we may be removed from it and being in the minority, I think even in the majority, you will find members often saying that they don't feel heard.
Last year's budget was over 2 weeks late. Ashby says late budgets have consequences.
It's not as if the policy and the money that comes out of the New York State budget transcends time, right? There are deadlines that have to be met. We have a short construction season. We have a shortened agricultural season, you know, in New York State, and that, you know, the policy and funds that come through this, they need to be met in a timely way in order for them to benefit, you know, the people of our state and the industries across the state.
First-term Senator Pat Fahey, a former assemblywoman, says she shares constituents' concerns over continued missed deadlines. Fahey is a Democrat from the 46th District.
I wish we could do both here, address the budget issues while addressing the policy issues. I know it's increasingly a budget tactic, or over the years, it's been a budget tactic. It is the governor's budget. All the Assembly and Senate can do is amend, and it's frustrating. And in the meantime, our budget is slowly eroding as every single day we are waking up to hear of more alarming cuts from the federal at the federal level.
According to the legislative calendar, legislators are not scheduled to return to Albany until April 28th. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Samantha Simmons.
Despite the fact that there is no longer a special election in New York's northernmost congressional district, the candidate chosen by county Democratic chairs is continuing his campaign for the general election in 2026. Blake Gendebien held a town hall in Plattsburgh this week to take questions from the public. The Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley was there and filed this report.
Incumbent New York 21st District Congresswoman Elise Stefanik was nominated by President Trump to serve as UN ambassador, and if confirmed, she would resign her seat, triggering a special election. But on March 27th, the president withdrew her nomination, and Stefanik will retain her House seat as Republicans cling to a narrow majority. The Democratic candidate selected by the district's party chairs to run in the special election is continuing his campaign. Plattsburgh's Strand Theater was filled with those who wanted to meet Lisbon farmer Blake Gendebien and find out about his policy stances. Dannemora resident Clement Kuchar came because he is dissatisfied with the federal administration.
We're hoping that he's going to be a good alternative to Elise Stefanik. And it seems like he is. Just a little bit we've learned about his background so far. He seems like he's a good person. He knows how to work, having been a farmer. And he seems like he wants to establish some change from what we're experiencing now. So we're here to find out more about him.
My name is Blake Gendebien, and I am running to replace Elise Stefanik in the upcoming election.
The Democrat told the crowd about his background and said his campaign is not a vanity project.
I do not have a deep, dark hole in my soul. I genuinely, this is for you. This is for my friends and neighbors. This is for the North Country and making this a better place to live. And we need to protect those programs that help make our lives better.
Questions were wide-ranging during the hour-long town hall. Plattsburgh resident Seamus Madden questioned how a Democrat can win in a district that tends to vote Republican.
If there's any hope for you to have any fighting chance against Elise Stefanik or any other Republican challenger, it's probably going to be through this northern tier.
Certainly in a special election, we had a huge advantage. The chairs, who I'm very grateful for, they selected a very moderate, pragmatic candidate in myself. I am very close to the middle. And I'm not going to apologize for being a moderate leader. I'm not going to apologize for wanting to work on things that we can actually get done. And that's the secret to winning rural America back.
An advocate for the LGBTQ community, who did not identify themselves, was concerned that Gendebien would not advocate for them because he is a moderate.
In no way, shape, or form does me being a moderate mean that I am not supportive of the LGBTQ community. One of the main reasons I'm here is because I don't like bullies. I have an aversion to bullying. I will stand with anybody. I can't stand to watch people get mistreated. And I've been watching the words, the dog whistles, the awful, awful rhetoric and awful language. I can't stand it. And it's one of the reasons why I'm here.
President Trump has hinted that Congresswoman Stefanik could be appointed to a different position in his administration. Jen DeBean says he expects that to happen and guesses there could be a special election before 2026.
I do think there's a good chance of her resigning in the middle of summer sometime and then having a special election this fall. Absolutely.
A number of Republicans had expressed interest in running in the special election. GOP county chairs had not chosen a candidate before Stefanik's nomination as UN ambassador was withdrawn. Jen DeBean plans to hold town halls in Potsdam, Rome, and Canajoharie this month.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. A trio of Hudson Valley lawmakers are calling on the New York Department of Transportation to detail its plan to assess the risk for ship strikes at two Hudson River bridges after a federal report listed them as being potentially vulnerable last month. The Legislative Gazette's Jesse King explains.
In a letter to State DOT Commissioner Marie-Therese Dominguez, State Senators Rob Rollison, Michelle Hinchey, and James Skoufis ask her to share her thoughts on a recent report by the National Transportation Safety Board. The report identified 68 bridges across the country that still need to be evaluated for their risk in a vessel strike. More than a dozen New York bridges were named, including two in the Mid-Hudson Valley, the Newburgh Beacon Bridge and the Rip Van Winkle Bridge between Hudson and Catskill. State Senator Rob Rollison, a Republican from the 39th District, says both bridges see a lot of traffic, from the vehicles that cross them and the cargo ships that pass underneath.
There are significant amounts of river traffic, but also, too, there are ocean-going ships that go, up and down the river all the time.
The NTSB report stems from its ongoing investigation into the collapse of the Francis Scott Key Bridge in Baltimore, Maryland, last year. The Key Bridge had a structural risk level that was almost 30 times above the federal government's acceptable threshold when it was brought down by the container ship Dali. Six people were killed, and shipping to the port of Baltimore was blocked for weeks. In a statement to WAMC, the New York DOT says it does not directly own any of the New York bridges listed in the report, but adds, quote, "We continually work with our partner agencies to ensure that bridges in New York State are regularly inspected and safe for travel. We welcome the NTSB's input and are reviewing the report's recommendations," end quote. The New York State Bridge Authority, which owns the Newburgh Beacon and Rip Van Winkle bridges, says it is also reviewing a copy of the report and the lawmaker's letter. To be clear, the report does not state that either bridge is in poor shape or at certain risk of collapse. It simply says no assessment has been done with recent data to determine how it would fare in a ship strike. The American Association of State Highway and Transportation Officials, or AASHTO, has a calculation for this that it created in 1991, but most of the bridges in the NTSB report were built before then. NTSB Chair Jennifer Homendy told reporters last month that the Maryland Transportation Authority never conducted an assessment for the Key Bridge.
Not only did MDTA fail to conduct the vulnerability assessment on the Key Bridge, they did not provide, nor were they able to provide, the NTSB with the data needed to conduct the assessment. We had to develop that data ourselves.
The Key Bridge was classified as a critical essential structure at the time of its collapse. The NTSB report also considers the Newburgh Beacon Bridge a critical essential structure for the traffic it sees, while the Rip Van Winkle Bridge is considered typical. In their letter, Rollison and his legislative colleagues ask for a timeline to assess the New York bridges, as well as a list of any steps or reviews the state has already taken.
To be able to, you know, better understand what we're going to do as a state, whether it's the DOT, Bridge Authority, in conjunction in addressing those concerns. So the motoring public, the individuals who work for the Bridge Authority and work on these spans, have an understanding of what the challenges can be and how you're going to address them.
Rollison says there are multiple agencies at play when looking at shipping safety. For example, the U.S. Coast Guard helps ships navigate where the water is deeper as they travel the Hudson. In its report, the NTSB recommends that the Federal Highway Administration, Coast Guard, and Army Corps of Engineers start a team to guide bridge owners in evaluating and mitigating their risk. Overall, Rollison says it's better to be safe than sorry, and it's important to know where New York's bridges stand.
The bridge collapse in Baltimore really, I think, raised such a heightened sense of awareness on how these things could happen because, you know, clearly things can go wrong.
Other New York bridges listed in the report include the George Washington Bridge, the Verrazano Narrows Bridge, the Brooklyn Bridge, Manhattan Bridge, Seaway International Bridge, Thousand Islands Bridge, and more. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Jesse King.
And that about does it for this week's show. The Legislative Gazette is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. We had help from the New York Public News Network. You can listen anytime at WAMCpodcast.org or anywhere you get your podcasts. Look for program number 2515. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina. Support for the Legislative Gazette comes from United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org.